This episode of Locked On MLB is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. They're good for you. They're tasty, and I can't get enough of the mint brownie. Use promo code Locked On for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. Let's get on with the show.
You are Locked On MLB, your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast. We talk about all of Major League Baseball, and I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully. On this episode, which is being dropped on the 20th day of May, 2020, I'm going to answer one more review that I got on iTunes about the topic that I'm tired of talking about, but it won't go away. And then I'm going to turn back the clock and do one of the great what-ifs in baseball history, which goes back to an episode that I dropped back in December 2015 of the Old Sully Baseball Podcast. This show is available on the free and easy-to-use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available wherever you get your podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Player FM, Podbeam, all the places where you know how to get a podcast. You're listening to one right now, unless you're on the website, which is LockedOnMLB.com. You can follow us on Twitter at LockedOnMLB_net or on Instagram at LockedOnMLB. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter. That's my private account, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. More of my private opinions are on there as well. And in this strange time, strange and oddly controversial time, be sure to stay home, be safe, okay? It's not about being afraid, it's about being safe and smart, and you can ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB, or some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Fantasy Baseball with Scott Cullen. Okay, first of all, thank you very much. A lot of you wrote some very nice posts to me based upon what I did the other day for my pop. He is not dead. A couple of people asked me if he is dead. He's not. He just is in a facility where he gets the help that he needs for his pretty severe dementia. And it was nice to listen to the podcast for me personally when I re-listened to it, because I got to hear my dad's voice again when he was healthy and before he got ill. And so a lot of people wrote to me and had some nice things to say about that, and I really do appreciate that. And some people shared with me some of the issues that some of you are having with your folks. And it's hard, man. It's hard. And thanks for sharing it. I decided to wear my heart on my sleeve a little bit, and I'm glad that you all appreciated that. Hey, I'm going to be playing, as I said earlier, a part of another Sully Baseball podcast about the topic of the Red Sox and the basically one of the great what-ifs in Red Sox history. And it's not what you're thinking. It's not about what if they didn't, what if they pulled Pedro? What if that Bucky Dent popped up? Nothing like that. No, it's something more to the very heart of what it means to be a baseball fan in New England, and I'm going to talk about that. The subject of coronavirus and my take on the fact that I think it's crazy to start the season resulted in yet another Apple Podcast review that I'm going to share with you, because I do not shy away from people criticizing me. I was on the Rattle Podcast, by the way, which is a terrific show about the Diamondbacks. It's a Diamondbacks-based podcast, which is, they exist, and they're great Diamondback fans out there. And I was a guest on the show on Tuesday. Jesse Friedman, friend of the podcast, was the host, and we talked about my feelings about the fact that I think it's crazy to start a season now. Especially, the main point I made was, we don't have enough data. We don't know if it's going away or not, and running into it right now could be a disaster, and why are we risking a disaster at this point? Now, I had a one-star review, and someone bringing up politics and Trump earlier that I addressed this week. I got another one today. This one is from Steel Brew. And what I'll say to you, Steel Brew, is thanks for giving me a 5-star rating. I appreciate that. The other guy gave me a 1-star rating. You gave me a 5-star rating, which, by the way, I encourage, if you're going to give me a bad commentary, at least give me a good rating. Anyway, he says, with the title, "So what do you want?" 2 question marks. "Forget politics!" Exclamation point. "Take it out of the equation." Okay, fine. I never put politics in the equation on this. When will you be not afraid? Not sure that's grammatically correct, but when will you be not afraid? Okay, I guess it does. When your scientists say it's okay to go out again, then in all caps, "They are not going to do it!" Exclamation point. "Their whole point is for us to stay inside and hide." Have you seen George Carlin's rant about damaging your immune system? I know it's not a scientific view, but hate to tell you he's right. We need to stop hiding. I know you are totally fine with flushing the season away, but some of us are not. Okay, I'm just going to quickly address this. I won't do a whole show on this, but there were a couple of things here I want to point out. When will I not be afraid? I don't think this is fear-based. I think this is the basis of what I'm saying is we don't have the data to know when it's safe to go be out in groups of people. And because we don't have that data, we shouldn't. That's not being afraid, that's being smart. Now, when your scientists say it's okay to go out again, I didn't realize I had scientists. Now, my mother is a scientist, but I don't claim ownership of my mother. When your scientists, this is a medical and scientific issue. So medical minds and scientific minds should be the only ones we listen to right now. That's what it's about. I've made this analogy before, but when your car is breaking down, you don't go to the florist. When there's a pandemic, you don't turn to people who very openly say this is not a scientific view. And that seems to be common in the people who are criticizing my stance, saying this is not a scientific view, I'm not a scientific expert, and I think, well, thank you for adding the rebuttal into your own show there, into your own comment. I do not think there should be a division between scientists and the rest of the country. They're not the bad guys in the situation. They're people who are trying to figure it out. And when scientists don't have the data, they tend to say, "I don't know," instead of making stuff up. Now, that may be disappointing to you, but also that's what we kind of have to go on right now. This is a scientific issue, so we listen to scientific people, or scientists, or doctors. I'm very, very familiar with George Carlin's rant about damaging the immune system. George Carlin is my favorite comedian of all time, and he did a rant about he used to swim in the Hudson River, and the dirtiest river in America, and because of that, he built up a great immune system. Now, that's a really funny point of view, but also, we're not going to start throwing people into the Hudson River like it's the River Styx, okay? And while that was a very funny bit that he did, it's not really scientifically relevant. You may want to have a stronger immune system and everything, but we don't know the path of this virus or how strong it's going, or we're even close to a vaccine. So, as wonderful as George Carlin is, he was not a great scientific mind. And he was also someone who was, well, he didn't believe that we should listen to people who don't know what they're talking about on certain subjects. George Collin was right about some things, not right about other things, but I think he would not be in favor of making decisions in a pandemic based upon whether or not you're making money or whether or not you're bored with your Netflix queue. They're not my scientists. They're our scientific minds. So what do I want? I want data. When will I not be afraid? When I get the data. It's kind of that simple. But thanks for the review there, Steel Brew. And I'm kind of tired of talking about this topic, but people keep writing to me about it, and I'll keep responding. We're going to be doing some simulated games, and I have a couple of topics I want to bring up on some of these upcoming shows. But quite frankly, I hadn't gotten around to writing them out. I didn't want to do them in a half-baked style. So I'm going back to playing a show that I did back in December 14 of 2015, where I brought up this intriguing what if about Red Sox fandom and New England sports fandom in general. First, I want to talk to you about Built Bars. Built Bars, I gotta tell you, I know I've been talking a lot about them. They are the best tasting protein bar ever. I'm not kidding. I usually dislike protein bars. I think they are usually not very tasty. But these are great. These taste like a candy bar. They've got 16 great flavors. Some have nuts, some have not. They've got chocolate flavors. They've got toffee. They've got caramel. They've got mint. My personal favorite, which is the chocolate raspberry. They're soft and they're easy to chew. And they're good for you. Look, if you're trying to lose or maintain weight during this strange time, this is a great way to do it. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. One of my favorites is mint brownie. They got 15 grams of protein, 110 calories. You can work that off in a second. 5 grams of sugar, 5 grams net carbs. They're terrific. And I have some right here. I got a box of them. I'm looking right at them. Here's what you should do. You should go to BuiltBar.com. Use the promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get $10 off your first order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for $10, your first order of BuiltBar.com. And one other thing I want to talk to you about is Postmates, because we're using Postmates. In this strange time, there are businesses that are open, but you can't go to restaurants and convene there. I had a great birthday. It was kind of a late lunch, early dinner thing that we had, and I got things delivered from our local barbecue, and it was great. I mean, I got my fish and chips, but my family got ribs and burgers. It was terrific, and we used Postmates to get it. And you know what? They can get food delivered to us without leaving the house, without opening the door. They create non-contact deliveries. So when you order from the local places like our local barbecue, we're not getting a plug here. Everything is left right outside the door. And it's not just my fish and chips they're delivering. They can make your life easier by picking up anything you need from Walgreens, 7-Eleven, and dropping it off right outside your door. Download the Postmates app on iOS or Android. Find your favorites and get anything you want delivered within the hour. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use the code LOCKEDON. That's code LOCKEDON for $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. Just download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. Okay, I'm going to be playing this part of a podcast that originally dropped in December of 2015 on the Old Sully Baseball Show, where we talk about one of the most mind-boggling what-ifs in Boston Red Sox history. It used to be, you know, before the Red Sox became a super popular national team after the 2004 championship, it used to be if I would walk around New York with my Red Sox hat, which I would, or I'd go down south with my Red Sox hat, or I'd go to California with my Red Sox hat. If you saw someone else with a Red Sox hat, you can kind of nod to them and say, hey, where are you from? And you get either an answer like, oh, I'm from, you know, Hingham, or I'm from Manchester, New Hampshire, or I'm from, just outside of Providence in Rhode Island, which, of course, everywhere in Rhode Island is near Providence. Or you'll hear someone say, oh, I didn't grow up in New England, but I went to Tufts. You know, so there was always that sort of that little connection. It was like this sort of, it was like a tribal tattoo.
And then since 2004, I've bumped into a lot of people. Like I just the other day, I was up in the Bay Area. I was walking through Palo Alto. I saw someone with a Red Sox hat and a Red Sox sweatshirt. And I kind of nodded and said, "Hey, are you from New England?" And they looked at me and said, "No." As if I asked a weird question. As if I said to him, hey, do you wrangle lobster? You know, it's like I asked a strange, are you from Neptune? No. Well, why would you think I'm from New England? Well, you're wearing a Red Sox cap and I said, oh, I just like the Red Sox. Oh. And I punched him in the face. Only one part of that story was untrue. But there's something interesting. You know, I've talked about how the universe, one of my favorite topics is the universe. And one of my favorite topics is how the universe is a series of chain reactions. Our existence is a series of chain reactions. Our concepts of reality are a series of the results of chain reactions of events. And basically, how we perceive reality, the things that are so ingrained in our reality, are so fragile in terms of the order of which events happened in life and in the universe. Now, what does that have to do with the Red Sox? Well, this connection to being from New England and being a Red Sox fan is something that's, when we get to year 2017, this connection will be about 50 years old. It's about a 50-year-old connection. A 50-year-old assumption. No, it doesn't go back to Ted Williams. No, it doesn't go back to Bobby Doerr and Johnny Pesky. It really doesn't. It really goes back to 1967. Now, I have talked about this, but it's something worth really thinking about and understanding. I mean, I did a podcast on this similar subject, but I didn't go into such a deep dive as I'm about to today. Now, something that you should know, a site that you should go to, is called stadiumpage.com. You will look up and realize you've been there for 4.5 hours. Visit them at stadiumpage on Twitter. It's a remarkable, remarkable site. And they have a couple of things there for proposed Boston. They have all sorts of great, you know, pictures of old stadiums, designs of old stadiums, pictures of upcoming stadiums. You get to see the evolution of stadiums. But my favorite part of it, and the part where you go on this wonderful deep dive, is what is called the unrealized concepts. And what this is are the stadiums that were proposed. There are no fewer than 3 domed concepts for Boston. The biggest one, the one that looked like was going to, and the one I talked about, was the one that was floated around in the mid-1960s to create a downtown Boston sports complex with a dome stadium for the Red Sox and an arena built right next to it for the Bruins and for the Celtics. The dome would house the Patriots. So basically every sporting event would take place in this small area, which of course would create a phenomenal traffic nightmare in Boston, which is already a traffic nightmare as it is. But there was also concepts in the early 60s for a dome. And one of the domes that was going to have that you see there, it was going to have a big luxury hotel and everything like that. It was going to have an arena. It was going to be a whole big, huge complex in Boston. But there were several other concepts that would be not in Boston, but in the suburbs of Boston. There was another Boston Dome concept. There was something that was going to be in Needham, near Dedham, in the suburbs. The Red Sox were going to play in something that would essentially look like the Astrodome and be surrounded by parking. But you go back to the 1950s, and they have a site there in 1958. This was going to be in Norwood, Massachusetts, a proposal, $60,000 for football and baseball. Now, there was the Red Sox didn't bite on that, but were big-time biting on those other domed projects. And keep in mind, there have been I posted about this, I've talked about this, article after article about how Tom Yawkey, remember beloved Tom Yawkey? Anyone who listens to this podcast knows I hate Tom Yawkey. I think Tom Yawkey and the Yawkey family did more damage to the Red Sox brand, and the history of the Red Sox than any one person could ever do. It was the curse of the Yawkeys. F them. Tear down the name Yawkey Way. Rename it to Jersey Street. Take down all the idols and plaques to Tom Yawkey. And Yawkey's presence in the Hall of Fame is my greatest argument for bringing in Bonds and Clemens and everyone else who some of the people want to keep out for PED reasons. Said, excuse me, if Tom Yawkey's face is up there, then I think we can put Barry Bonds' face up there too. Thank you very much. Take his plaque down, melt it down, and make it something useful. But one of the things that beloved Tom Yawkey was part of the rewriting of history. He would have done anything to have a winner in Boston except sign Willie Mays. He loved Fenway Park. He loved Boston. He loved this. He loved that. It's all crap. It's worth swearing about Tom Yawkey. And I will always relish any time I can crap on Tom Yawkey because he's a miserable human being. But one of the things that the whole myth of, oh, he loved Boston, just wanted to have a winner in Boston. He wasn't from Boston. He bought the team as an investment. He never wanted to play anywhere but Fenway Park. I remember hearing his wife say, he loved Fenway Park. He never wanted to leave Fenway Park. Gene Yawkey was from Massachusetts. And it's not true. Tom Yawkey wanted a new stadium. And he said he will move the team. Said that several times in the winter of 1966. He said, there's all the quotes. I'm losing money here. Only a fool would lose money here. And if he's not going to get a new stadium, he's going to move them out. He wanted to move them out because he saw what was happening all around baseball at the time. They were building all of these beautiful shrines, you know, like the beautiful new Atlanta Fulton County Stadium, or the beautiful new Shea Stadium, or the beautiful new Candlestick Park. And they're building these beautiful new palaces like Three River Stadium and Riverfront Stadium. And he was stuck with Fenway Park. Now think about that for a second. When people talk about those cookie cutter parks that I just was mentioning. Those were considered so ugly and such huge eyesores. They're like, oh, man, remember how awful it was? And they were all playing in these cookie-cutter parks. And you couldn't tell one from the other. And that's more rewriting of history. They were looked upon as these beautiful new palaces and the great thing that all the teams should be having. And Yawkey wanted one of them. He didn't want Fenway. He wanted Atlanta Fulton County Stadium. He wanted Candlestick. Now you look at that, what are you talking about? People love Fenway. It's beloved Fenway. It's a shrine. It's a place you go to. You worship there. At the time, it was a dump, and they were tearing down all the dumps. They were going to tear down Connie Mack Stadium. They were going to tear down Sportsman's Park. They were going to tear down Forbes Field. They were going to tear down all these other places and build all these cookie-cutter parks. Well, that would have been Fenway. They would have torn down Fenway. Or here's another thing that could have happened. They could have moved the Red Sox. One of the Red Sox in the mid-60s said, we're out of here. And Boston probably would not have lifted much of a finger. Probably not. Do you know why? Because attendance was crap. People weren't going to Fenway. The team stunk. And they were playing in an antiquated ballpark that was crumbling. They would have been gone. Now think about, and I have brought this up before, but think about all the places in the mid-60s where there wasn't a team. There wasn't a team in San Diego. There was not a team in Dallas. There was no team in Milwaukee. There was no team. The Milwaukee Red Sox, boom, there you go. The Dallas Red Sox, boom, there you go. They would have, where else was there? There was no team in Denver. There was no team in Miami. There was no team. The Braves were just moving to Atlanta, so there was a team there. There was no team in Toronto. There was no team in Seattle. There are all these different venues. There's no team in Phoenix, although it probably would have been too early to put a team in Phoenix at that point. There are all these places where it would have been perfect to fit the Red Sox. The Dallas Red Sox, bring them on. And if you think that sounds absurd, how is that any more absurd than the Indianapolis Colts? How is that any more absurd than the Browns moving or the Dodgers leaving Brooklyn for that matter? So it would have, and you Red Sox would have been the team of not New England, but of Dallas. And eventually there would have been a hole that needed to be filled. And there was expansion coming up in 1969 and probably would have been an expansion team. So instead of the Royals or the Pilots, you would have had the, or maybe it would have been a National League team. Instead of the Expos, maybe the National League would have expanded into Boston. And maybe you would have some expansion National League team like the Boston Minutemen or something like that playing in Boston. And you would have had a much different rivalry. You don't believe me? One of the big rivals for many, many years with the New York Yankees were the Philadelphia A's. And a big reason was they both were exchanging pennants for a bunch of decades and the proximity of the two teams. Now nobody thinks of the A's as a natural rival for the New York Yankees. The natural rival for the Yankees is the Red Sox for regional reasons. But maybe, maybe I would have grown up in New England, big-time Minuteman fan, as they played in the Foxborough Dome. Got to go to a couple of games from time to time. And man, whenever they played the Mets, whenever the Minutemen played the Mets or played the Phillies, oh man, you knew it was going to be a big game. And I'd have my Minuteman hat. And it would be like a Revolutionary War soldier holding a baseball bat, which of course in the bicentennial years, oh man, love my Minutemen, gotta love my Minutemen. That probably would. It's actually not a bad name for a team. And you know, there's always heated rivalry with the Mets. You remember the Red Sox? Oh yeah, Dallas, man. You know, that was the age when they had Fred Lynn and Jim Rice the same time that the Cowboys had Roger Staubach and Ed Too Tall Jones. Man, when you think of Red Sox, when you see some of the Red Sox hat, go, hey, you from Texas? You from Texas? No, I'm from New England. Oh, big Minuteman fan. Yeah, man. Man, when they get in those scraps with the Mets, that's the way it is. That could have been how we look at it. Or maybe this. Maybe baseball isn't as big in New England. Maybe it's a much bigger basketball region or hockey region. Maybe I grew up in Massachusetts. Like, yeah, I grew up in Massachusetts. But, you know, I didn't really follow baseball that much. The Minutemen weren't very good. They played all the way out in Foxborough. How do you know that may be the way it'd be? I don't really care about the NFL that much. Do you know why? Because the Patriots, they weren't that good. They played all the way out in Foxborough. But, man, I do this podcast called Sully Basketball, and we do it 365 days a year. Do you know why? Because the Celtics were the team. Oh, if you're from New England, you grew up a Celtic fan. That becomes the given. So that's how the universe unfolded. What happened in 1967 is the Red Sox won the pennant out of nowhere, and people started flocking to Fenway Park, and suddenly Fenway Park became a positive place instead of a negative place. And suddenly people fell back in love with baseball and realized how fun it was after more than a decade and a half of real lifeless, meaningless baseball in Boston. And from that moment, from that great acorn, did this forest grow. The first time that in the television era, the Red Sox were really relevant and the visual component of Fenway Park became a plus rather than a negative. And from that moment, we can really realistically point to the beginning of Red Sox fandom as we now know it, including with me. So F Tom Yawkey, and let's enjoy the universe as it unfolded, because I don't want to see a bunch of Dallas Red Sox fans talking about how glorious 2004 is while we Minutemen fans are still waiting for our first title.
Okay, well, hey, thanks for listening to that, and what a weird world that would have been to have expansion in New England baseball. But is that any weirder when you stop and think about it, of an expansion team being in New York and the creation of the Mets? I don't know. You don't know. But it's an interesting what if. There are going to be some what ifs that we're going to be doing throughout this week and a couple of simulated games, including, hang on, Cubs fan with an 8, I'm redoing the 2015 postseason if the Pirates had won the wild card game. It's just taking me a little longer to get through that one, so I do want to rush it. So go to the free and easy-to-use Himalaya podcasting app and go to all the places where you get your podcasts. We're going to be having some fun talks. And follow us on Instagram at LockedOnMLB and on Twitter at LockedOnMLB_net. This has been the Locked On MLB podcast for the 20th day of May, 2020. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Do you know what you can do? You can call me Sully.